You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again James Perloff. He was with us a couple of years back. I think 2017 might have been the last time we had him on the show. James is the author of a number of books. The first one that I think that he wrote was The Shadows of Power, an expose of private influence on American foreign policy that is it's sold over 100,000 copies. He's written a bunch of other books as well. I really have a very high regard for James and his intellect and his honesty and his willingness to take on issues that are you know, not the kind of issues that the mainstream media necessarily wants you to think about or talk about. But he has the courage to go and to say what he believes is true, and that is really what I think is very important in a day in which people are really trying to be politically correct and ignore, in many cases, ignore the truth about various issues. The book that we want to talk to him today is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. In this book, he asks some really hard questions about the global response to COVID-19, and that is mostly what I want to talk to him to today about. James, thanks for joining me again.
Well, Jay, thank you. Like you said, it's been a few years, but really good to be back on the air with you.
It is good to have you back, and I should mention it's jamesperloff.com, folks, if you want to follow up after our discussion today with all that James is doing, jamesperloff, P-E-R-L-O-F-F.com. James, you know, as I mentioned, the first time I learned about you was through a book called The Shadows of Power. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that book, just an overview of what it's about?
Sure. I became what you might call blue-pilled, and that is a metaphor that's taken from the film The Matrix. People who are blue-pilled basically just accept whatever the world media tells them, and people who are red-pilled have started to wake up to what's really going on. I got red-pilled, you might say, when I read Gary Allen's book, Then They Call a Conspiracy, in 1978. Then I began writing for the New American Magazine in the mid-1980s. And they asked me to write an article in 1988, which turned out to be a book, The Shadows of Power. It's a study of the Council on Foreign Relations. And what this deals with is the reality that America is not really a democracy, but rather we're run by a financial oligarchy that runs behind the scenes under the facade of democracy. And they were using the Council on Foreign Relations as a means to supply cabinet-level personnel to presidents, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And that's easily documentable. I mean, they've had about 20 each of secretaries of state, secretaries of treasury, secretaries of war and defense, and CIA directors, if you go through the records, they've just dominated. And but that was, you know, the old American establishment, the Rockefeller Morgan means of controlling our domestic and foreign policies. And so that was a bestseller in 1988, and I've continued to explore geopolitics since then, always following a learning curve of my own.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Donald Trump is a problem for these folks?
Well, he certainly has the right sound bites. You know, I voted for the guy, and you know, it really, in 2016, it was absolute no-brainer to vote for him against Hillary, because Hillary Clinton, not only did she get more donations from Goldman Sachs and Wall Street than anybody else, but every plank in her agenda, in her platform, was what you might call Rothschild. It was, you know, control of the internet. She was a hawk on wars. She was pro, you know, the gay, transgender agenda. When you name it, she was bad news. Donald had a lot of the right sound bites. I've been concerned with some of the subservience he's shown to Netanyahu and the Zionist lobby here in America. When it comes to to, I don't know if I should say the word or not, I'll call it the big C, the disease we're dealing with right now. He's given some mixed signals. He advocated hydroxychloroquine, which was a really good thing, and which the big pharma has been trying to suppress. On the other hand, he established Operation Warp Speed in White House to get a COVID vaccine out, which we really don't need. We can get the reasons for that. But, I mean, even according to the CDC, as of May the 22nd of this year, 99.74% of all Americans were surviving COVID without a vaccine, and they were using inflated death counts even in that case. Yeah. So I'm very guarded about Trump. Let me put it that way. I do certainly support Trump's supporters, the deplorables, the constitutionalists, the people who are patriots. I'm 100% behind them. I think that Trump himself may be compromised if we were to look deep into some of the policies that he's implemented and some of the people that are surrounding him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that you've been following geopolitics since you wrote The Shadows of Power. Mm-hmm. Do you see some connections? Perhaps you can help us. If there are some connections between your latest book, COVID-19, and The Shadows of Power, because your Shadows of Power really look forward to a lot of things that have come to pass, I think, since that book was written. I believe that was back, when did you write that book?
It was published in 88, although 88, it was right. Actually kind of in the works for a couple of years before that it was published.
Okay, so can you see some connections?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in that book, I spoke about how the Council on Foreign Relations had consistently advocated world government, and I documented that from articles in their journal, Foreign Affairs, going back to 1922, when they were advocating joining the League of Nations and saying that only world government would solve the world's problems. David Rockefeller, who was chairman of the council for many years, of course, was a big advocate of world government. And now we see in the wake of COVID that Gordon Brown, the former UK prime minister, is advocating global government to solve the COVID crisis. We definitely see continuity here. And what's most frightening to me, Jay, is this channeling of all these COVID things into a global reset, cashless society, a global vaccine, probably mandatory, and a global digital ID. It seems that Bill Gates is at the helm of a lot of this stuff, even though he has no medical credentials. So definitely the things I spoke about and the things we've warned about in alt media about a new world order coming and a globalization of the world in a very negative way are coming to fruition. And I'm especially concerned about this global reset that the World Economic Forum is predicting will come in 2021.
2021, you're predicting what?
The World Economic Forum is calling for a global reset. And okay. They've put out a video where people like the head of the World Bank and Prince Philip keep talking about COVID as an opportunity, they say, despite the tens of millions of people who are out of work and suffering. They say it's an opportunity to change the world, and I'm afraid they're going to come up with a cashless society, you know, a digital ID, and we might follow the prototype of communist China, which ever since Henry Kissinger dragged Richard Nixon over there in 1972, they've been building up with American investment a technocratic society there. They don't even use cash anymore in China. They're communist, which, you know, the communists usually lag behind the West, but we've given them Western technology, and they're utilizing that with facial recognition, cashlessness, and police state, high-tech police state, which I'm afraid may indeed be a prototype for what is planned for us here in the West.
So they have a social grading, I think, as well. So if you're not thinking the right thing or talking about the right thing or having the right religion or saying the right thing about the political system or whatever. In other words, your freedoms, your liberties, the kind of things that we've taken for granted in America over the decades, basically the government would have a way to shut you down, essentially, to deny you, to deny you your revenues, to deny you to get on an airplane, those kind of issues, right?
Yeah, even before COVID, they had social credit scores in China, which meant that if you were obedient to the government, you had a better opportunity to travel, a better opportunity for a good job, a better opportunity to go shopping. And so this is very systematic installation of the totalitarian state. on a technological level.
Okay, looking at some of the chapters in your book, I think we've touched on the second chapter, Destruction of Civil Liberties, just now, and what the remarks you just made. But chapter three, was the lockdown necessary? What are some of the thoughts that you express in your book about that?
Well, I talk about the lockdown's damage to our health, you know, the delayed cancer and heart screenings, the fact that Reuters says 28 million Americans are now at risk of being homeless because they can't pay rent or mortgage. Mm-hmm. How can being homeless be good for your health? You know, there was a survey before COVID that showed that 49% of Americans were living paycheck to paycheck. And we know that without people working, there's limited tax revenues for the government, and the government cannot continue to sustain this lockdown indefinitely. We're looking at a potential financial collapse. I'm sure you, I think you would agree with that. And
yeah,
that could be
absolutely.
One of the things that would lead to the reset. But as far as why the lockdown is unnecessary, I have a chapter that is chock full of scientists from around the world, not just from America, from around the world, who say from a medical perspective, there's no justification for the lockdown. You know, I quote, for example, Drs. Erickson and Masihi, who had a YouTube video out. They tested more people out in they're out in Bakersfield, California. They tested more people than anybody else in their region for COVID. And they said that the chances of dying from COVID in California are 0.03%. In other words, it's something similar to a flu. And they said, absolutely, we should not lock down. Well, that was censored by YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I quote many other people in this. But one thing I wanted to do with this book, Jay, is many of the people like them and Dr. Knut Witkowski, the epidemiologist, and Dolores Cahill, the eminent PhD immunologist from University College Dublin, they've all been censored by YouTube. I went through and I either found transcripts of their interviews or made transcripts myself, and then I took key excerpts because I wanted this to be preserved in hard copy, because I've got a website, but I now know when that, you know, digital information, you know,
sure,
that can go out the door anytime. So I wanted to really preserve this. But I quote in that chapter, you were referring to Sukrat Bhakti, various German virologists who all say that absolutely there's no justification for lockdown. The death rates are so low that there's no comparison to the death that will come from the lockdowns and the economic destruction and the tens of thousands, or if not hundreds of thousands of small businesses that are going bankrupt.
Well, in your book, you do say that you're not taking this disease lightly, that it is serious. And you have a medical background yourself. I think you were a nurse, a registered nurse in the past. But could you put this in perspective, though? I think in one of your chapters you talk about how this compares with other means of dying. I mean, there's lots of ways that people die. So putting this in perspective, how does this compare with some of the other much larger methods of dying?
Right. Well, it was interesting when President Trump announced the lockdown nationally, which is Friday the 13th in March. At that time, and this is from the Worldometer's website, they said there were 21,000 deaths from coronavirus, but seasonal flu counted for 113,000, malaria 228,000, suicides 249,000, traffic accidents 313,000, HIV 390,000, alcohol deaths 581,000, smoking over a million, cancer almost 2 million. It just goes on up. I'm not completing the list there. And also, if you put in perspective, we've seen worse pandemics than this in my lifetime. And when I was a child, at the age of 6 in 1957, I got a shot for the Asian flu. Well, the Asian flu killed more than a million worldwide. That's more than COVID, even if you accept the inflated COVID numbers. We can get into how they've inflated the numbers. But the Asian flu, you've got to remember that the world population back then was 2.8 million compared to 7.5 million today. So it's about one-third. So over a million deaths then was like more than 3 million today. Yet nobody dreamed of locking down economies or masking or social distancing. We're seeing something that never happened before, and I am a registered nurse, still am. I retired last year. I was a registered nurse for 45 years. And in the history of America, we have never quarantined healthy people. This is entirely contrary to protocols. And I have to say, Jay, that as a geopolitical writer, I started writing for The New American in 1985, 35 years ago. I've never seen greater disparity in the mass media and government spokesmen, a greater disparity between what they're saying and what reality and logic say. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with a crazy, but the death rates are plunging. And Ron Paul has spoken about this in July in one of his Liberty reports. He said the death rates are down 90%. So why isn't the media celebrating this good news that the mm-hmm. death rates from COVID are plunging? Instead, they started talking about the case numbers, which is based not on people being sick, not on people dying. It's based on the PCR test. And as one eminent German lawyer put it recently, what we're dealing with now is a PCR pandemic. You know, people test positive, but these people are not, for the most part, symptomatic. We're actually, and I quote a number of epidemiologists in my book from Italy, from England, from Switzerland. I quote Beta Stadler, who's the former head of the Institute of Immunology in Switzerland, says the disease is gone at this point. What they're detecting in the PCR test is just fragments of DNA that people have encountered from when their immune system ran into COVID, but they didn't get sick from it. And this is craziness. Yet we have seen as the death rates go down in places like Australia, New Zealand, and England. And in some places, America, the COVID lockdown measures are clamping down. Thank God for Pennsylvania and Michigan, where courts have now ruled that their lockdowns are unconstitutional.
Yeah, we can only hope, because I guess the idea is that if you keep enough people dependent, I mean, you said even before the pandemic, lots of people, a large percentage of Americans, were living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. So if you take their jobs away, then they have nobody to turn to but the government, essentially.
Right.
So now you've got some locked-in votes, don't you?
Well, you've got to certainly have a prescription for socialism there. Unfortunately, I have heard reports that people are getting very comfortable living at home and getting the government paychecks. But obviously, as you and I know, the government can't keep paying these paychecks forever. It would have to expand the money supply. That would inflate the currency and collapse it ultimately. And I think that's what the World Economic Forum is probably salivating for as they look forward to what they're calling the Great Economic Reset of 2021.
Yeah, it would seem to be in the cards, and certainly some of the people that I follow, people like, there's various, high-profile people.
Spiros Skiros?
That are certainly talking about this. Well, I'm talking about the from Yale. I'm missing his name right now. The economist at Yale, who was at Morgan Stanley for many years, mm-hmm. Now talking about how he thinks the dollar is on its last legs. Certainly, a lot of people on this show that we talk to believe that mm-hmm. that's the case. So it would be coming together, and the COVID-19, the lockdown, would accelerate the process and make sure it happens, I would think. But certainly, the only thing the policymakers can do now, James, is to. The only thing they know to do that's politically palatable, at least, is to print more money and accelerate this process of indebtedness and eventually a currency that becomes worthless, I guess, which is why, of course, I'm telling our listeners that they should be buying gold and transferring their their dollars while they still have some value into tangible assets. But let's get into it with just a few minutes we have left here. Theories about the nature of COVID-19 and how it was spread. You have a chapter, you have maybe a few chapters in your book talking about that. What are some of the theories about where it came from, how it was, what are some of the ideas that both the mainstream and people outside the mainstream are expressing?
Yeah, well, this book is it's broken into 27 very short chapters and five mm-hmm. sections. The first section is on the lockdown, which is, it's undisputable we've had a lockdown. I wanted to stick with that at the beginning because it's indisputable. Then I talk about how they've panicked the public through hyperinflation of numbers, and there's various ways they've done that, such as conflating COVID with other diseases, tampering with death certificates, etc. But as far as theories go, that's the third section of the book. Mm-hmm. And I start with a chapter on the mainstream theory of the origin, which is that it was this wet food market in Wuhan mm-hmm. that was selling bat soup, but some people say they never did sell bats or bat soup. Then I go into the bioweapon theory, that this was bioengineered. And I quote a number of very credible sources, Dr. Shiva Ayyadari, from MIT, who, he has 4 degrees from MIT, who is pointing out that this had to be engineered in a lab. I quote Dr. Francis Boyle, who drafted the U.S. language for the Biochemical Weapons Convention. He quotes a number of scientific studies. I quote a paper from 9 Indian scientists saying that based on the examination of the genome of the virus, it could only come about in a lab. I quote Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus. He says this could not possibly have come about by any place but a lab, as well as Merrill Nass, biochemical weapons expert, and others, on the fact that this is clearly coming. If we consider this a virus, it's clearly coming from an engineering process. But I also look at other theories in the book. I look at the 5G theory. There, I quote people on both sides of the argument. There's responsible people from both sides, but there are people, for example, Dr. Ronald Kostoff of the Georgia Institute of Technology believes that 5G, remember that Wuhan was the rollout city for 5G in China, mm-hmm. that 5G is weakening people's immune system and make them more vulnerable to it. And Meg De Havas, PhD, points out, she's done studies that show there's a much higher correlation of coronavirus, the COVID, in areas that do have 5G as opposed to don't. Not to say that it doesn't occur in people in regions that don't have 5G. But there's some other theories. I quote Dr. Stephanie Seneff of MIT, who believes that airborne glyphosate is a factor. Dr. Zach Bush, who thinks that the air pollution in northern Italy and Wuhan, New York City, was a factor. I quote Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who says that under an electron microscope, the coronavirus looks exactly like something called exosomes, which are exudates from cells that are expelling wastes. And he says these wastes could come from another source. So I try to quote a number of sources, not taking a side myself, but I try to leave as many options open. But certainly in doing so, I step outside the realm of consideration of the mainstream media, which simply says, always says, it's simply a natural mutation of the coronavirus.
Right, that's what they say. And I should tell my listeners, it's jamesperloff.com. And James, all of your books are thoroughly, very, very thoroughly documented. I must say, you obviously do a lot of work. A lot of work goes into these books, and a lot of checking your sources before you put them in there. So it's very, very important that people know that. I think we should end on perhaps your comments in chapter 27, hope and encouragement, because as you point out, if you read everything up until that point in time, it can get pretty depressing. In fact, a lot of people are depressed these days by what's going on. But sure. you offer some encouragement, noting that at least from a Christian point of view, there is no reason that we should lose hope.
Right. Well, what I point out is, you know, if you look at the biometric IDs that they're planning to actually, this is from, not from, and that's not a conspiracy theory, it's from Rice School of Bioengineering. I quote them on how they're, at the request of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they're actually planning to inject people with a digital tattoo that'll have your vaccination record. And now they've got a project in West Africa where with MasterCard, they're integrating your financial data with your vaccination data. You can't get much closer to the mark of the beast than this when you consider that right now in many stores in America, you can't buy or sell without a mask. Well, mm-hmm. we're only one step away from telling people they can't buy or sell unless you've got a vaccination tattoo mm-hmm. on you. But in terms of hope and encouragement, I point out to people the Bible doesn't end with the Antichrist. It ends with Christ. And in that chapter, I quote many, many people, the former tennis champion Murat Safin, who's awake to what's going on. I quote members of parliament from foreign countries. I quote doctors from around the world. I quote mainstream media journalists from Sky News and Fox who are speaking up about this. I quote religious leaders from the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, the Evangelical Church, and Muslims as well, who are awake to the fact that something is coming down that has nothing to do with our health. I mean, when you've got a survival rate of 99.74% from the CDC as of May, and it's even lower according to the CDC now, they say if you're between 20 and 49, according to the CDC, your chances of surviving COVID are 99.996%. But I want to stress something. This is where I put a disclaimer in. I know we're almost out of time. Bill Gates keeps hinting at pandemic two, and that there's something going to happen in the fall that will get people's attention. I am concerned that actual death rates will start to climb in the fall. Either they release a new bioweapon or they turn on 5G at full force. We know that at 60 gigahertz, it has a very negative effect on oxygen absorption. So there's a lot of things that could happen, but people have to get the book. Again, it's called COVID-19, The Agendas to Come, a Red Pill, ranked number one on Amazon yesterday for respiratory Excellent. Disease category.
Wonderful.
So
congratulations. Yeah. James, we have to go. We'll have to leave it go at that. But thank you so much. Very entertaining, very important information, and very well documented. Thank you so much. That is it for this week, folks. Next week, I'm going to have Rick Rule with me. Dr. Quentin Henning is going to be talking about XK mining, and Michael Oliver is with us. And so until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.